following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 31 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. My name is Jason Bryant. Today we're talking NWCA convention as it just wrapped up in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. On the call today, Mike Moyer, Executive Director of the National Wrestling Coaches Association, and John McGovern, one of our co-founders here at the World Wrestling Resource and head wrestling coach at the University of Dubuque. First of all, Mike, welcome to the program. You got to take a deep breath now that the convention's over, right?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jason. That's exactly what we're doing. We're taking a couple deep breaths.
And since I worked at the NWCA from 2005 to 2008, the convention was the thing. We went to Buffalo, we went to Pittsburgh, and then all of a sudden, since it's moved to Florida, there have been a lot, you know, the attendance has been up. There's been the Leadership Academy that's been added to it. I mean, it seems like the NWCA convention has found a real home in Fort Lauderdale that also entices coaches not just to come themselves, but to bring their families as well.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's such an inexpensive place to come. I think, you know, we're in a 5-star resort beachfront hotel, you know, overlooking the ocean for, I think it was $130 a night. You know, you can't touch that just about anywhere else in the country. And, of course, flights in and out of Fort Lauderdale are very inexpensive. So it's, I know myself, you know, we used to take a couple of weeks over to Jersey Shore, and it's cheaper to put a family on a plane and fly them down to Fort Lauderdale and do that for a week than it is to drive a couple hours to the east.
Yeah, as far as, and plus, you don't have to pay to go to the beach in Florida like you do on the Jersey Shore.
Yes, exactly.
So as it relates to the convention, John, putting this to you, from a Division III wrestling coaching angle, why is the convention important, and why should coaches who don't attend, why do they need to attend?
Well, from a coaching standpoint, whatever your division, you get to stay on the cutting edge of what's going on to help your wrestlers, you know, be at their best. They had some great sessions with, you know, some of the research from, you know, the mindset training with Zanetti Brothers and Jared Spencer brought in some research on sleep and nutrition and just some of the best practices for coaching athletes today in this culture. And Mike does a good job selecting the speakers. And then, you know, obviously for the coaches from the NCAA Division III, it's a great place to have a voice and speak on any current issues as we prepare for the, you know, vision ahead and where we're trying to take our sport.
And also, Mike, that's one thing that John touched upon is the array of speakers in terms of what they bring to the table. We'll hold off on the keynotes for right now, but like, you know, John mentioned the Zanetti brothers, and, you know, I've spoken in the past about social media. You've got a various degree of things that involve coaching, like Heath Esslinger and Steve Garland talk about, you know, families, and they have their wives involved in speaking to wrestling coaches' wives and what it's like to be a wrestling wife. There's so much that goes into coaching that's more than just single legs and gut, you know, and if you're a freestyle guy, gut wrench defense. I mean, why bring these things into the convention that are more than just wrestling technique?
Well, when you really think about it, almost every profession out there has certification requirements. Coaching, particularly college coaching, is one of the few that doesn't. There are some requirements, like you have to have a college degree. Sometimes you have to have a master's degree, that sort of thing. But, you know, it is just so important that coaches today have the CEO skills to keep their programs strong. Institutional funding is getting harder and harder to come by. And so unless coaches have the entrepreneurial skills to supplement their institutional budgets, it's really a tough way to survive. And so we do so much in the way of sports psychology and time management and nutrition and we really cover the entire gamut of what a high school or college coach really is responsible for. And so that's one big piece of the convention. The other thing that I would say that is so critically important about it is our sport needs 3 or 4 days a year where we can come together as a collective body and celebrate our successes and problem solve without the distraction of competition. You know, almost any other time we're together as a group, you have the distraction of competition. So it's really hard to jump into meaningful type initiatives and challenges that are going on out there. And I'm thrilled to say in the 17 years I've been doing this, you know, our attendance has steadily been climbing. But we can never have too many people there. You know, until we have every single coach at every single level there, we still got room to grow.
As we talk about one of the big things that has helped the attendance at the convention has been the advent of the NWCA CEO Leadership Academy, which Dan Gould has been helping formulate with others for a number of years. And John, you've been part of this Leadership Academy. What was some things that you saw that this thing is going to be like, yeah, this is going to be good for our sport. This is great for coaches.
Well, you get a lot of one-on-one time and mentoring with other coaches and, you know, in leadership training, CEO training, but also you can get that at the convention too, just one-on-one time. There's a lot of time to interact with other coaches. And I won't name names because, you know, coaches don't want to reveal some of their secrets, but one-on-one and overall, a lot of the coaches just want to help other coaches help build better men to the sport. And so, you know, that convention is very well organized with some great speakers, but, you know, it's a lot of the breakout sessions and just the one-on-one time that you get from other coaches and sharing ideas that are relevant to your program.
Yeah. And Mike, let's go back to square one on this Leadership Academy. I mean, where was this concept brought up and why was it so easy to implement into the convention or was it not easy?
Well, the bottom line is this, there is nobody that plays a more important role in the future of our sport than the head coach. And one thing we know for sure is that head coaches who are great leaders will be much better at problem solving and overcoming local challenges than what we could ever do out of a national office. And so the truth of the matter is we lost over 500 college wrestling programs between 1972 and 1999. Had we had something like this in place back in 1972, you know, we wouldn't have lost nearly as many programs. It's really been a game changer for college wrestling. And, you know, it's in place for a couple of reasons. You know, one, we want to make sure that the current head coaches of our existing college programs are the absolute best stewards of their programs possible. But the second piece of it is we've had such phenomenal growth. We've recently helped to add our 154th new college wrestling program since 2001. In fact, we have 24 new college wrestling programs just for next year. And as much work that goes into establishing a new program, if you don't have a great coach to put at the helm, it simply isn't sustainable. So we've been providing 100 full scholarships for head and assistant college coaches, and in some cases, some high school coaches that want to transition to college. We've been providing 100 full scholarships for coaches every year to go through this comprehensive training program. And the truth of the matter is, I wish we had more funding because we need to accelerate it just to keep up with all the new programs being added.
Now let's look at it from a non-association standpoint. So say you're John Q wrestling fan and you hear all this, oh, this is great. We're adding D3s, we're adding NAIAs, we're adding D2s. Great. Well, what's the NWCA doing to add Division I programs? Let's just answer that question right now because we did have Fresno State brought back first Division I team since 2006 to bring back the program. And a lot of that had to do with a president, Joseph Castro, who really wanted to bring wrestling back to Fresno State. But let's get a little bit of what the NWCA had in regards to helping add Fresno State back and why people still want to focus on Division I versus Division II, III, and the NAI, et cetera.
Yeah, well, the first thing we're doing is making sure that the 77 precious Division I programs we have are absolutely as strong as they can possibly be. Anybody that's been following intercollegiate athletics knows that in the last couple of years, the Super Five conferences have really sort of emerged as the leaders in Division I. And they have passed legislation over the past two conventions that have increased the cost of operating a Division I athletic program by between $1 and $3 million. Now, that's even a challenge for half of the 65 super conference schools that are out there. And when I say super conference, I'm talking Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, Southeast Conference, Pac-12. But it's really putting stress on the mid-majors and the lower-level Division I programs, of which there are 280 of those schools. So we want to make sure through the CEO Leadership Academy that our coaches, every current head coach, has the absolute CEO skills that they need and the entrepreneurial skills to keep those programs strong. Now, very covertly, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes to bring some Division I programs back. I'm not at liberty to mention which schools, but I can tell you there's not a day that goes by that there aren't wheels in motion. And in some cases, we're working with state governments. In other cases, we're working with high-profile business leaders. It's a tall order, even in the best of circumstances, but nevertheless, we never take our eye off of that ball. You know, Fresno State is a perfect example. I think what really happened at Fresno State is they really underestimated how much eliminating their wrestling program would impact their overall fundraising efforts for the entire school. Because so many of the business leaders in that Central Valley out there are closely tied to the wrestling community. So, you know, we've never given up. And quite frankly, we haven't given up at Cal Davis. You know, every week that goes by, there's some things going on behind the scenes that, you know, we're still trying to bring that program back. But the reason we've had so much success at Division II, Division III, NAIA, and junior college is those schools tend to be enrollment-driven, and the addition of an inexpensive sport like wrestling with a big roster size just makes good business sense. The president sees it as 40 to 50 students paying tuition, room, and board that otherwise wouldn't be there.
Yeah, but it's also not just a situation where it's like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll add wrestling. There's work that goes into it. You've got to convince them that this is the sport to add versus, say, a sport like lacrosse, which is super popular, especially it's not just a Northeastern sport anymore. I mean, how do you get wrestling to be that sport that gets added in a competitive atmosphere where all these sports want their sports to be at the college level?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, one of the things we do is for many of these new programs, we provide startup funds in the neighborhood of $15,000 to $25,000. Another thing that we do is in many instances, we fully vet their slate of coaching candidates. And again, through the CEO Leadership Academy, we get a pretty good idea who our bright shining stars are and which ones aren't. One of the other things we do at the convention, which is one of the best kept secrets, and I don't understand why every assistant college wrestling coach in America isn't there, but we actually conduct mock interviews with Mark Tutti, who's a CEO of Sports Search. You know, he has placed thousands of coaches and athletic administrators in positions across the country. And here, our assistant coaches and even head coaches have the opportunity to come in, role play, go through an interview, have their resumes reviewed. And through that process, again, it's the first step that we have in vetting who some of our best and brightest coaches are out there. So we can save a lot of these college administrations, you know, weeks and months of legwork and expense by simply saying, hey, here's 3 to 5 candidates that you should absolutely bring in and interview. You know, we let it up to the schools to pick which one. Our goal is to just make sure there are 5 phenomenal coaches that make it really difficult for them to try to choose which is the best one.
That kind of puts a bow on the Leadership Academy. One of the other things that the NWCA has done, this is kind of more of, maybe it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it's something that you have to do as a nonprofit. And there is a board of directors, and that board structure has changed. And I talk a little bit about how the board is going to be streamlined and basically reimagined, so to speak. And that was passed this year as well.
Sure. So when I got here in 1999, you know, we had a terrific board of directors. It was about 34 members strong. And back then, our organization was really volunteer driven. And so what we needed from our board is very different from what we need today. The other thing that has changed is the NCAA has changed its infrastructure. So today, most things in the NCAA are done through conference. Initiatives and legislation is sponsored by conference. So we have restructured our board to be more aligned with how the NCAA operates. And so we essentially have one representative from each collegiate division. That representative is either the president of their divisional coaches association or the chairperson of their divisional leadership group. And think of a leadership group in the same way that you think of the NWCA Division II Coaches Association or the NWCA Division III Coaches Association. And so underneath each representative who sits on our board, there's a much more defined committee structure, and that committee is much more representative of the conferences or at the Division II and Division III level, the regions that qualify wrestlers to advance to the NCAA championship. So essentially, we're much more nimble, but we have a much more transparent way and a much more inclusive way of formulating legislation and proposals and sort of pushing them through the various layers of NCAA or NAIA or junior college, whatever governing body might be in play.
John, I'm going to spin this over to you as you have had a leadership position with the Division III Coaches Association. And in that role, what are the type of discussions that go on with Division III coaches, whether it be at this convention or through conference calls or even, meetings at the Division III Championship? So as one of those board members and those heads of a divisional association, what goes on?
Well, there's talk about, are they want to use RPI to determine, how to get the best wrestler of the championship, the regional championships, how to break down the regions based on the values, that the body, takes into consideration, whether it's getting the best wrestlers to nationals or, just having geographic location and travel and all the other issues involved there. So it's a place to, for the coaches to voice their concerns and then, follow a process to try and get our voice, heard through the NCAA. And it's been a pretty, good relationship that way. But, there's just, topics that are brought up that may not happen, like Division III national champs going to the Division I national tournament. They may not happen. But then the discussions like would the NCAA is, interested in Division III, 2-on-1, all under one roof? Would that be something that the coaches are interested in Division III if it all happens at the same time? So just different topics from related to Division III to benefit, the wrestlers and the coaches. And a rising tide always raises all ships in the ocean, right? So it's just working together to promote Division III wrestling, but wrestling overall in the country.
Now, Mike, this will touch on our discussion about the strategic plan and the Blue Ribbon Task Force here in a bit, but there are, as you said, there are 77 Division I programs, and I think Division III is now over 100. Division II is growing, NAI is growing. So we're looking at Division I is typically viewed as it's got the biggest fan base, it's got the biggest crowds for nationals, and it seems that that's the tail wagging the dog, so to speak. How is this board structure going to help the Division III coaches, Division II coaches, the NAIA, the junior colleges have their concerns, be like, hey, wait a minute, there's more to life than wrestling than just these 77 Division I's? It's got to be an interesting, scale of justice to balance.
Yeah, one of the things I just want to say about that often gets overlooked about the Division II, Division III, NAIA is historically those are the types of programs where we've developed most of our high school, middle school and elementary school teachers and coaches. So when you talk about replenishing the depleted pool of coaches at the lower level, those college programs are absolutely vital. And we need to celebrate all of them. It doesn't matter. Of course, Division I is where we're most threatened, but all these other collegiate divisions that are growing. I know when I started, I think we had 28 Division II programs and now we're at 60. And NAIA, I think we were in like the high 20s, and now we're 56, 57. So it's really been phenomenal growth. But the point of the matter is the NWCA is not a governing body, so we can't mandate anything to happen. But from my experience, when you have a transparent and inclusive process for formulating initiatives and legislation, from my experience, the governing bodies are much more likely to listen. They don't have to adopt any proposals that we forward. But as I said, with the right process in formulating these ideas, anything's possible. And I think this new structure we have in place, in fact, I know this new structure we have in place will take our sport light years with respect to being more successful at getting initiatives through the various layers of approval with the various governing bodies. So a perfect example of that would be the Blue Ribbon Task Force that's been put together for Division One. And as you've said, Jason, the reason we started out focusing on Division One is because that's where, you know, we've gone from 146 teams down to 77. So that trajectory is very different than how we're doing in Division Two, Division Three, NAIA, Junior College. And by the way, women's, we now have 30 intercollegiate women's teams out there, and we are one NCAA member institution away from starting a women's wrestling program where we can qualify for NCAA emerging sport status. But anyways, in this strategic plan, it's essentially an independent commission of very high profile leaders, leaders like Commissioner Bob Bowlsby out of the Big 12 and Deputy Commissioner of the Big 10, Brad Traviola, and Debbie Yao out of the ACC. And there's about a dozen members on here, and Jim Salas, who is retired athletic director, University of Northern Arizona in Northern Colorado. He's the facilitator. And there's a lot of discussions within Division One right now about things like health and safety, time demands, making things more spectator and media friendly. And so this Blue Ribbon Task Force has given Jim Fowles a directive to form subcommittees and dive into some of these buckets, so to speak. And that's what's been happening since last January. And out of those subcommittees, you know, a draft proposal has emerged that was shared with the Division I coaches last weekend down at the convention. And for the most part, it seemed like it was pretty widely embraced. So the feedback from the coaches will now go with the draft strategic plan back to the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and where they're going to sink their teeth into it. And some of these concepts may look pretty similar to what they are today. Some of them might change dramatically. But the point is to make sure that our sport is positioned for Division One, particularly, is positioned to take advantage of those opportunities to add new programs whenever possible and to make sure the programs we have remain as strong as possible. I would encourage you to reach out to Jim Salas and maybe do your next interview with him. He's really the, you know, the point person to speak on behalf of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and he could give a lot of insight into the some of the basic, the meat and potato of that plan. And to your point, Jason, one of the things that's the reason we've restructured our board is some of the things that are in that plan possibly could impact both positively and negatively other collegiate divisions. So anytime there's something out there that can impact the other collegiate divisions, it's important to have the leaders of each of those divisions sitting around the table. Conversely, if a collegiate division is proposing something that only impacts that specific collegiate division, then the structure that we have in place enables that proposal to go right from the leadership group right to the NCAA and through the various forms of approval. So it's a much more streamlined process, and we won't spend hours at our board meeting discussing something that just impacts one collegiate division.
Well, also these boards and these meetings at the convention also has, at least from an NCAA standpoint, Anthony Holman in Division I's there, Ryan Tressel Division II usually there, J.P. Williams in Division III usually yep. there. So you've got the NCAA. This isn't just a bunch of wrestling coaches waxing poetic saying, rabble, 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 rabble. There's actual NCAA and NAIA and junior college representation yep. here as well.
Yes, exactly. No, that's really the primary purpose of the convention, is to provide a platform to bring all the key stakeholders together. We even had that at the convention, you know, this past week, the leaders of a lot of the organizations that run youth tournaments. And you know, we've got some challenges there that need to be solved. So, you know, we had Bob Johnson of the AAU and Dave Dean of New Way, and you know, just a collection of youth organizations that, again, everybody has a vested interest to see wrestling participation grow. And it doesn't matter if you're in the magazine business, if you're in the media business, if you're in the wrestling tournament business, everybody needs to see it grow. And so we need to work together to make that happen.
One thing I do want to touch on before we get into the strategic plan, we'll touch on that just a little bit. Again, we'll talk to Jim Fallis on a later program. But one has been the keynotes, the guys that have come in and spoken over the years. You had mentioned Bob Bowles, but he had spoken a couple years ago. Yep. This year, Major General Paul Kennedy of the United States Marine Corps and NASA astronaut Kel Lindgren, who wrestled with one of your former wrestlers, Brian Hazard, at Robinson Secondary in Northern Virginia. You've got a NASA astronaut and a Major General from the United States Marine Corps, in addition to guys like Bill Lamb and Joe Geiger, who have been, you know, kind of regulars at the NWCA convention. I mean, let's talk about, you know, Major General Kennedy and NASA astronaut Kel Lindgren real quick.
Well, Major General Kennedy, I mean, he oversees all Marine Corps recruiting. I mean, he's the guy. And he's a former wrestler. And in a lot of ways, the Marine Corps has the same kind of challenges that we have. You know, we have entities with a lot of history and tradition that are trying to recruit in an environment where everything's made to make things easier for people. And there's nothing easy about the Marine Corps. There's nothing easy about being a wrestler. So we share so many things in common. And the Marine Corps is also very interested in getting more female officers into their program. And so they're just amazed with the growth that we've had with women wrestling out there. So, I mean, all the keynote speakers. I mean, I was just blown away. I wish they were there for days. Just so much wisdom, so much encouragement, so much enthusiasm. I mean, arguably it was one of our best panels of keynote speakers we've ever had.
John, I want to spin it over to you. What did you take away from the speeches you had a chance to hear at the convention?
Well, once you've wrestled, other things become real possible. And, you know, I think it's an inspiration to everybody to see how successful people can be, you know, after the sport of wrestling, and where they can take their lives, whether they've reached their goals or not. And I think that was one of the questions one of the guys asked at the convention, you know, after he, explored space, what's the next goal? And, you know, always set new goals, better never stop. So it was really inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, once you get to space, let's think about this for a second, Mike. When we get to space, I know Tom Brands has the quote that said, you know, if there's life out there, you know, the battle is universal. I mean, what do you tell a bunch of wrestling coaches and be like, yeah, we got it tough? And you're like, dude, I walked in space. You want to know tough? I mean, it's got to put things in perspective.
Well, I asked Dr. Kel Lindgren, you know, the astronaut, I said, you know, how do you keep yourself motivated after coming back from space? He says, you know what I want? I said, I'd love to know. He says, I want to go back. And now they're talking about Mars. He said, we're a little bit of ways off from being able to get to Mars, but he has no doubt we're going to get to Mars. And once you get to Mars, who knows where the next place is. And as John had said, you know, once you wrestle, everything else is easy. You know, Coach Dable's famous line. And that was really the takeaway from, I think, all of these keynote speakers. Once you've wrestled, anything's possible. And it was, they were all so inspirational. It was just really awesome.
Now, I do get to ask this, Mike, because you're constantly on the move, making phone calls. Are you already eyeing the first college wrestling program on Mars?
Well, it's never too soon. I'll tell you what, anything's possible. I'd like to get a few more down here on Earth, particularly Division I programs. But after every college in the country has a wrestling program at every collegiate level, I think maybe we should start on the moon. It's a little closer, and then work out from there.
All right, let's spin with go back to the strategic plan, the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And like you said, this is the Blue Ribbon Task Force is kind of an independent panel. This is headed up by Jim Fallis, is an independent. The NWCA is just kind of the presentation vehicle here. And when it gets to the strategic plan, where wrestling is going, the biggest discussion point that's come out of this, there's been a few minor ones in terms of red shirts, like Tom Ryan was quoted as saying, talking about the red shirts and things of that nature. But when we get to the moving of the season, and it's always been the battle, that first weekend of college basketball, March Madness, at least from the Division I standpoint, that is where our Division I championships started. Division II and Division III, they're back a week. They don't really run into it. They run into some of the March Madness. The NAIA, they've got their own March Madness to contend with. They're on top of their championships are the same weekend as all the Division I college qualifiers. So we've got that battle within our sport. as well as, you know, contending with basketball. And why is the shift? I mean, is it mainly because of television exposure, or are we looking at something that makes it more along the lines of eligibility requirements, you know, not going to practice in October, just 2 months into your college career? I mean, Mike, where's the general idea coming from, a shift of the season, not a complete move, but just merely a shift? It's still going to be considered a winter sport, but, you know, not going to be as fall to spring, more so that's just winter to a little bit of spring.
Yeah, great question, Jason. It's really all the above. You know, there could be a benefit from a media standpoint that you're not under the umbrella of March Madness basketball. But one of the other things we absolutely have to improve as a sport is the NCAA now has a metrics that measures eligibility and retention rates of athletes in all the different sports. And at the Division I level, it's called the APR. And it's a four-year average that each team in each sport has. And the truth of the matter is wrestling currently ranks third from last. And nothing makes our sport more vulnerable. You mentioned earlier about what's it take to get new Division I programs added. Well, if a college president or an athletic director has a choice between two sports, one's at the top of the APR ladder and the other one's near the bottom, we're really behind the eight ball before we even start. So the conventional wisdom is those that really favor the one semester sport believe that currently it's kind of like the perfect storm, which is really impacting the academic performance. What you have is you have a lot of freshmen who are first generation college bound wrestlers. In other words, the first in their families to go to college. And then you have, it's not unusual where a freshman might lose more matches in the first 3 weeks of their career than they've lost in their whole life. And then you put on top of that the weight-making piece of it, and you put on that missed classes, because a lot of these tournaments, you know, they're leaving school on Thursday or Friday to get to these tournaments. And then you put on that midterm exams, and it all happens right around the same time. It happens right around the later part of October. And there's just some people that believe that you know, a lot of our wrestlers are in kind of in quicksand, so to speak, academic quicksand, before they ever get out of the starting blocks. So by shifting everything so it begins after final exams in that first semester, there's a, you know, a belief by some that it will give that whole first semester for incoming freshmen particularly to get their feet underneath them academically. And there's also a time demand. The season's not too long. Hopefully you would see less injuries and less burnout and that kind of thing. So there's going to be more debate around it, but I think those are you know, kind of the concepts that have been spoken about around the benefits of going to a one-semester sport.
Yeah, and one thing that did jump out was the length of time for the dual season and the tournament season, kind of a split season within a season. You know, it doesn't appear that this is set in stone. I mean, how much discussion do you think is going to happen? Because we're still a number of years away from this happening, because we've got championships dates that are already set. But as I look at it, you're seeing right now we've got a 3-week tournament season. That could be, I'm assuming, maybe an added week. We got to move maybe events like the Cliff Keen. The Midlands looks like it's in a good spot. Same with the Southern Scuffle, but you know, Reno is kind of you know, in that bubble. Okay, where do we begin? And how much discussion was there about what we do with the current tournament landscapes? And then, of course, there's the people that are sitting there wondering, okay, the NWCA is involved. How are they going to try to sneak a national duels component into this?
Yeah, well, again, there's been a lot of discussions through the subcommittees so far. And then, again, this goes back to the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and it's possible that it could take a life all into its own. I, you know, really don't want to sort of anticipate what's going to happen, but I do know, and Jim Fallis would be able to speak a lot better on this, but, you know, he's going to be taking these recommendations, the feedback from the coaches, and it's going to be headed back to the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and then they're going to really begin a lot of the hard work. And there should be a lot more dialogue around all of it. You know, there's still quite a bit more that needs to be vetted.
All right, one thing that I did want to bring up is Andy Vogel from D3Wrestle.com, the head wrestling coach at Gettysburg College, had a couple things he brought up that this type of thing would impact Division III. Now, from what you know about this. Is this just a Division One plan to move just the Division One season? Are we going to talk about moving all of college wrestling into this? And then we get into a situation where, okay, each tournament's probably 4 or 5 weeks ahead, or, you know, later than it normally would be. I mean, is this just a Division One thing, or are we talking, you know, is the Division Three championships going to be a clear month before the Division Ones?
Well, this goes back to the whole restructuring of the NCAA. And as you know, the NCAA today is federated. So way back in the day, it used to be one school, one vote, regardless what division you were in. You know, now there's, you know, I don't want to say there's firewalls, but there's, you know, there's definitely lanes for each collegiate division. I do know, like, just speaking about eligibility and retention in Division II, much like Division I, they have something called an ASR. And that's kind of a modified metric that the NCAA uses for measuring retention and eligibility in Division II. And, you know, wrestling is 1 point out of last place. So I think that there's a lot of these concepts that are in this Division I strategic plan that absolutely could help the other collegiate divisions. And I think it just needs to be a lot of dialogue. It just needs, you know, and that's why we've restructured the board, so we could have better dialogue and, you know, we could have a much better sense of how these concepts impact both positively and negatively other collegiate divisions.
Coach McGovern, I'm curious on your thoughts on what this might impact from your standpoint as just a Division III coach, not necessarily speaking as the entire organization, but, you know, with a potential shift in season for whether it be Division I or the whole thing, where do you see what's good for Division III? Do you think a move later on would be good for Division III as people think it would be good for Division I?
Well, I think it's important to know why you're doing what you're doing. You know, they had some good reasons why. I don't like to put my opinion out there because I know the big thing I'm supposed to do is get the voice of the coaches and get their feedback. From an educational standpoint, the reasons behind it, you know, were, you know, helping the wrestlers academically. Tom Ryan brought up a point about, you know, some of the guys that, you know, maybe not related to the calendar year, but somewhat, you know, red shirts coming in, and why red shirt? Why not get kids to graduate in 4 years? And, you know, sometimes the kids early in the semester are trying to figure out that lineup a little too early, and it gives them time to maybe matriculate, focus on classes, you know, get healthy, and from an academic standpoint, and just obviously from the fan, the growth standpoint, the reasons why, you know, there was a lot of reasons why. And so then I guess what you're coming at, there's going to be coaches that have reasons why not, and those are the reasons why you have a convention and a place for people to present those opinions, and then you just go with the, you know, best plan moving forward. And so it seemed like there was a lot of good reasons, you know, for it, and for growing the sport and getting a fan base that doesn't compete for basketball, you know, basketball tournaments or whatnot, and academics and different reasons. So I'm interested to see how it plays out. But you know if everybody doesn't agree, you know, that's what makes our country great, actually. So we just need to come together and everyone have a voice and put together what they think's best. But I thought the task force did a good job of explaining why, and it seemed like a lot of good reasons why. So that's all. Leave it at that.
Yeah, John, sounds like we're going to have Jim Fallis come on once we get through this Olympic stuff, because that's why we don't have Dennis and Terry on today. They're getting prepped for Rio. I'm flying out in a couple days. And as we come back to the NWCA discussion, Mike, in the time we've got left, what are some things, I mean, you say you can't talk about the specific programs that you're eyeing, but say if there was a blueprint, Division One, even Division, I mean, obviously Division Two, Division Three, those enrollment-driven programs seem to be the targets, but say if there was a type of school that the NWCA is looking at Division One, it's like, huh, am I off base? I'm saying no football, you know, if they don't have football, that's usually a plus right off the bat, right?
Not necessarily. Here would be a couple things that we look for, and not, I don't want to suggest this is the only thing we look for, but one of the things we look for is occasionally you'll find very prominent wrestling alumni that are still connected with a program that is no longer. And, in some instances, those alumni can help the president get what they want. Through the addition of a wrestling program. It's kind of, you give me what I want as a wrestling alum, I'll help you get what you want which is, you know, a $500 million campaign for the overall interest of the university. So that's one situation. We also look very closely in states where there's no college wrestling or maybe no Division I programs. And typically, state-funded schools that are funded with taxpayer dollars do have some obligation to provide activities that are deeply embedded in the culture of their state. And so we've had some success interacting with state lawmakers and doing some things like that. So I would say those are the two areas that we look the closest at. Of course, there's always, and I do believe there's going to be more and more enrollment-driven Division I schools out there, not nearly to the extent that we see in the other collegiate divisions, but nevertheless, we're going to start seeing some more of them, and that would be another place that we would continue looking.
All right, in the time we got left, John, do you have any comments for Mike on our convention discussion?
From a coaching standpoint, just looking forward to, you know, working forward the best options to help wrestling grow and bringing those topics forward. And sometimes you can't be resistant to change if you want to grow. So we'll just keep plugging away.
And by the way, John just came on our board. He is the president of NCAA Division III. He's on our board. And just want to say what a great ambassador he is for our sport and to represent Division III. John, it's great having you on there. And look forward to working very closely with you over the next few years.
Thanks, Mike. I better get going. I gotta catch this one of these mom people. So thanks.
All right, that'll wrap up episode 31 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. We'll catch up with Jim Fallis at a later time. Check us out for Rio, Dennis Hall, Terry Brands, myself. We're gonna try to get an episode done down there as best we can. But for John McGovern and Mike Moyer, my name is Jason Bryant. Thanks for listening. Find us on iTunes at World Wrestling Resource Podcast and on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.